7.4 million people on this island, and there were not 7.4 million people protesting. However, it's much more nuanced than that.
Just how strong is the support for Hong Kong protesters by Hong Kongers? It's Tuesday, October 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You want to be part of this program? Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Find out how. Also ahead, some experts say North Korea is planning something big. Concern grows about the air people are breathing in parts of Malaysia. And many Australian newspapers had their front pages blacked out. It's VOA Asia. How much support do the thousands of protesters have in their city of Hong Kong? Perhaps not as much as it looks or has been reported. It's a question asked by several media outlets in the beleaguered city Monday. Anita Powell is VOA's reporter there. We asked her about it.
The local media was talking today and asking the question about whether there is a silent majority in Hong Kong of people who aren't quite comfortable with the protests. The numbers would indicate that there is, because there are 7.4 million people on this island, and there were not 7.4 million people protesting. However, it's much more nuanced than that. Over the past week that I've been here in Hong Kong, I've spoken to a number of Hong Kongers who have been very clear that their employers have told them that they are not, how's a nice way to put it, that they would rather that they not participate in any political movements. So there are a good number of Hong Kongers, who I would counter the argument that there's a silent majority. There's also a good number of Hong Kongers who have feelings, who may sympathize with the protesters, but do not feel empowered to voice that. It's hard to say that this is a silent majority that disagrees with the protesters when you cannot ignore the fact that there are a lot of corporate employees who say that their employers would rather they not participate because it would tarnish the image of the business. I think it's important to note that there are events happening every single day in Hong Kong. Every single day, students at schools around the city hold vigils, put on masks, wear masks in schools, which is, of course, in violation of the law, and the schools stood by them. So there is political activity, but nothing at this scope, nothing at this scale. We reserve that for the weekends, and that kind of almost fits into the mentality of this very busy, very efficient city. You know, do your protesting on the weekend, work during the week. It fits the ethos of the city very well, I think.
Hong Kong officials apologized to Muslim leaders Monday after riot police sprayed a blue-tinted water on a mosque and bystanders with a water cannon while trying to contain turbulent pro-democracy demonstrations. The city's leader, Chief Executive Carrie Lam, and the police chief visited the Kowloon Mosque to apologize to the chief imam and Muslim community leaders. Officials were scrambling to minimize the fallout from the incident at one of the city's most well-known religious sites. The government said in a statement that Lam extended an apology for the inadvertent spraying. Authorities called it an accident, but a bystander's account disputed that. Some reports say religious leaders accepted that, at least some of them. Our correspondent Anita Powell said not all of them.
Well, the head of the Indian Association here said he does not accept her apology. And what's notable about this particular mosque, it's been on the protest path for a few weeks now. So everybody knows where it is. And on Sunday, we had protesters standing outside the mosque and saying, "We will protect the people in this mosque." And so it's hard to believe that the police could say that they did not know that the mosque was there, or they did not know what it represented. And so I think that might be the reason for the apology, because everybody knew it was there, and everybody knew that it might be a target. Protesters had said that they were not going to do anything to interfere with the mosque because they have respect for all of Hong Kong's residents, which include about 1% of the residents are South Asian in origin, which is the bulk of our Muslim population here in this city.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The United States and South Korea must produce new solutions for the current standoff on the Korean Peninsula. That, according to a senior North Korean military official Monday. warnings that the hostile policies toward Pyongyang would lead to serious consequences. These remarks add to recent comments from Pyongyang expressing discontent at the lack of progress in its negotiations with Washington. This month, North Korea issued a veiled threat about ending the freeze in long-range missile testing amid continued economic sanctions and pressure aimed at pushing it to give up its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. North Korean state media reported last week that Kim Jong-un's visit to a sacred mountain, the spiritual homeland of the Kim dynasty, and that his aides are convinced that the leader plans a great operation, which experts say may signal a major shift in Pyongyang's stance toward the U.S. in the coming months. Some analysts say possible North Korean actions could include another space launch or an intercontinental ballistic missile test. My VOA colleague Steve Miller, the host of International Edition, spoke with Harry Katsianis, senior director of the Center for the National Interest in Washington. Steve asked what Harry thought was really going on here.
I think it's very simple. The clock is ticking. I think the North Koreans are making it very clear through all different sorts of statements over the last 2 to 3 months that they're getting very impatient with the United States. I think they were under the assumption that the United States was going to offer some sort of deal, that the United States was going to offer some sort of step-by-step approach, which is what the North Koreans have been asking for a long time. And it seems pretty clear that either the United States is unwilling, unable, or just locked into impeachment chaos in Washington now.
Is it more than just that? Because the impeachment is one thing, but this is also an election cycle. And there's also the business going on in the Middle East with Syria and Turkey and the Islamic State group.
You're 100% right. So what ends up happening is what happens many times in Northeast Asia, that the problems with North Korea drop to number 5 or number 6 on Washington's radar. And that's when we have a history of North Korea getting a little antsy and deciding to raise the temperature a little bit. That's why I think when the clock strikes midnight on December 31st and we go into 2020, we are going to be back to a time of tension. I think there's no doubt about it at this point.
Well, you bring up New Year's Day because that is the time when Kim Jong-un gives essentially his policy speech, so to speak, his New Year's address. And we go back in, even, you know, this year, the 2019, and what he laid out and his goals for discussions and disarmament and denuclearization. Should we put more weight onto what is printed on the 2020 January 1st address?
Absolutely, because the North Koreans, it seems like every single time he makes that speech, he literally tells us what he is going to do. A lot of us that study Korea always, you know, unravel in the mystery of North Korea, and a lot of times there is a lot of things that they do that we don't understand, but the North Koreans make it very clear where they're headed. They told us back in 2017 that they were going to test ICBMs. Guess what? They did it. And there's a whole litany of things that you could go back to in these speeches that show that they always try to do. And I think in 2020, it's going to be no exception. I think what Kim is going to tell us is that he's turning the page with the United States and that his new way is probably going to be a combination of sanctions busting, allying with China and Russia, probably doing tests of more provocative weapons going into the spring, perhaps even an ICBM test. And then it's going to really be important for Washington to figure out how they're going to respond. And I don't think anybody really knows what the Trump administration is going to do, considering some of his actions in Syria recently.
Harry Katsianis, senior Korea director at the Center for the National Interest, spoke with our VOA colleague, Steve Miller. Seasonal rains are bringing relief from a toxic haze that had blanketed Malaysia and Singapore. The air pollution disrupted the lives of millions of people, and concerns remain about whether the problem will keep on happening. Dave Grunebaum has the story from Kuala Lumpur.
This is what many days looked like last month in Malaysia's biggest city. Toxic haze hovering over Kuala Lumpur and across much of the country.
We know that it's bad for the health, especially if you're exposing for a long period of time. Yeah, you don't know what you're bringing into your lung.
Visibility is horrible, and there's also the pungent smell in the air because of all the burning. And it's very harmful to health because you have all this, you know, this very fine hazardous particles in the air which we are actually inhaling.
Much of the smog swept in from Indonesia, where fires were set to clear land for plantations, although some of the plantations are owned by Malaysian companies. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, has a haze agreement, but it seems little has been done so far to address the problem.
the ASEAN Transboundary Haze Agreement has largely been a case of, you know, being like a paper tiger. It's something there on paper, but really has very little effect.
Malaysians wore face masks and schools closed because the air was so hazardous. Local doctors reported a surge in illnesses and an increase in prescriptions for antibiotics and other medicine.
There are a lot of upper respiratory tract infections coming along with this haze. More people are getting infections of the tonsils, infections of the pharynx, and also lung infections.
ASEAN countries have discussed closer cooperation on the issue. In Malaysia, discussions are underway about creating a law that would punish Malaysian companies that start fires on foreign soil.
So by having such a law in Malaysia, it enables the Malaysian government to take action against a Malaysian company or even a Malaysian company which is causing pollution on foreign soils. And this will be a means of deterrence, especially if one of them gets punished.
Environmental activists applaud the proposals, but add more cooperation is needed on multiple fronts.
That is, the federal government, the state governments and the local governments, in partnership with the corporations, in particular the large plantations, the communities and civil society, to work as a monitoring group as well. So they all need to come together.
The haze happens almost every year, though officials say this year was the worst since 2015. The dangers are visible. What's not clear is if substantial steps will be taken to prevent another season of toxic haze. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Australia's biggest newspapers have redacted or censored their front pages to protest against legislation that restricts press freedoms. Editors have argued the media is subject to a regime of intense government secrecy there and the threat of criminal charges for journalists for doing their job. Phil Mercer has more from Sydney.
The unprecedented front-page protest is meant to put pressure on the Australian government to exempt reporters from laws restricting access to sensitive information. In June, the police raided the headquarters of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and the home of a newspaper editor on suspicion of receiving national secrets. The ABC said the raid on its office was in relation to 2017 stories about accusations of misconduct by the Australian military in Afghanistan. Richard Baker is a journalist at the Age newspaper in Melbourne.
It's really the media standing up on behalf of the people we try to serve, which is the public, to say, hey, we work in this space so the public are informed and can make decisions about, you know, really important stuff that government does in their name. And when we can't do that, we feel like we're failing.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says the media must respect the law.
We'll always believe in the freedom of the press. It's an important part of our freedoms as a liberal democracy. Also believe in the rule of law and that no one is above it, including me or anyone else, any journalist or anyone else.
There have been long-standing tensions between the media and the Australian government. In December, a court order prevented the press reporting that the former Vatican Treasurer, Cardinal George Pell, had been found guilty on child sex abuse charges. Prosecutors are now seeking fines and jail sentences for 36 Australian journalists and publishers for their coverage of the trial. Australian media organisations argue that press freedoms have been slowly eroded by more counter-terrorism and security laws that have been passed since the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States. The government asked a parliamentary committee to investigate the impact of Australian law enforcement and intelligence agencies on press freedom. The committee will report its conclusions next month. Reporting for VOA in Sydney, I'm Phil Mercer.
Indonesian customs officials have arrested 4 foreigners for allegedly trying to smuggle drugs onto the resort island of Bali. The head of customs at Bali's airport says the foreigners, two Thai women, one Russian woman, and a Frenchman were arrested earlier this month. Indonesia has extremely strict drug laws, and convicted smugglers are sometimes executed. More than 150 people are currently on death row, mostly for drug crimes. About one-third of them are foreigners. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Aidan Utku, our managing editor, Diane Gao. Enjoy your day.